dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren.
This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. The program this week deals with the existential crisis facing New York State and Pennsylvania. The information you're about to hear is chilling, and the speakers are a panel of very well-informed people. On March 26th, the Shale Shock Citizens Alliance held a forum attended by more than 200 people in Ithaca, New York, on natural gas drilling, health effects, economics, and the watershed. The plan to drill shale gas in the Marcellus Formation threatens our air, our water, and our way of life. The gas industry and the government have lied to the people or kept them in ignorance. The truth must be known before it's too late. If you are listening on WEOS, Ithaca Community Radio, or KUOW in Oneonta, please call one friend or neighbor and ask them to tune in right now to hear how the gas drilling industry plans to turn our homes into an industrial sacrifice zone, as they have already done in the rural West. Water and air polluted, people and animals sick and dying, farmers' livelihoods destroyed. With your help, we will stop them here. You'll be able to download an MP3 of this program at unwelcomeguests.org. Please make copies and give them to your friends and neighbors. If you don't live in the area, you can also help. You can reduce your energy use by 30%. And a good way to do that is to start eating locally grown organic food. A significant portion of the natural gas that is produced is used to make chemical fertilizers and pesticides. Bad for the land, bad for you. The speakers tonight will be Albert F. Appleton. He's an international consultant on water resource management, the environmental management of watershed and rural landscapes, and the economics of sustainable development. As New York City Commissioner of Environmental Protection in the 1990s, he designed and initiated the world-renowned New York City Catskill Watershed Protection Program. Barbara Arundel holds a degree in bioengineering from Columbia University's School of Engineering, and is one of the founders of the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, DamascusCitizens.org, and serves as DCS Director and Chief Science Officer. Joseph Levine, another DCS founder, is an architect and partner in the New York City firm Bone Levine Architects, founded in 1982. The firm has been involved in many research projects focusing on the infrastructure of New York City's river walls, wetlands, tunnels, watersheds, aqueducts, reservoirs, and other essential structures. Here's moderator Ezra Sherman from the Shale Shock Citizens Alliance.
I want to welcome everyone here to this community forum on gas drilling entitled Health Effects, Economics, and the Watershed. I welcome everyone here tonight, whether you own property or live in the city, whether you live in the towns, whether you've leased your property, whether you're considering leasing your property, whether you would never consider leasing your property. I welcome members of landowner coalitions, members of local governments, and industry personnel. Good evening. My name is Ezra Sherman. I grew up in Spencer, New York, graduated from the Spencer Vanetten Schools and lived here in Ithaca for a while I practiced law. But I've always preferred physical work and working outdoors. And presently, I, along with my wife and a partner, own a fruit growing and winemaking business. We've, for the past 2 years, lived in Vanetten, New York, and intend to stay there. We started planting an orchard on Autumn's family's farmland with the intention of buying part of the family's farmland. That land is leased, and there presently is a producing gas well behind our house, drilled by the Fortuna Energy Company into the Trenton Black River Formation. I obviously knew about this well when we decided to purchase the property. It's a difficult detail of the environment to miss, but I figured I use fossil fuels, and this conventional well I could certainly tolerate until the production ended. Then, around a year ago, I heard of the Marcellus Shale Formation and drilling company's intention to drill into this formation using the technique of hydraulic fracturing. Water. The water from my parents' well in Spencer is actually something I think about when I'm away from their home. I thought about it when I was away at school. I think about it when I'm hot and thirsty. It is so good. One of the assumptions that I had in life was that the water here would always be good and plentiful. But now I believe that good water is not a given. Around 6 months ago, I went to a legal training in Binghamton on gas drilling, and the first speaker to present at that training was an owner of a gas drilling company from Texas. In 50 years, he predicted that there will be 3,000 to 6,000 gas wells in Broome County alone. Since each fracking takes several million gallons of water and each well can be fracked repeatedly, I asked him, where is he going to get the water? Oh, you have a lot of water here, he said enthusiastically. You have streams and rivers and lakes. The drilling companies are certainly here for the gas, but they are also here for our water. Water now is a commodity. I am reminded of how we are all united by the need for clean water for drinking and for agriculture. On an international scale, I am reminded of this common thread when I read that during the 20th century, while world populations increased fourfold, demands on water increased ninefold. More than half of the world's population will live in high water-stressed areas by the year 2030. And by that time, water scarcity could cut world harvests by 30%. The World Water Development Report, compiled by 24 UN agencies under the auspices of UNESCO, adds that shortages are already beginning to constrain economic growth in areas as diverse as California, China, Australia, India, and Indonesia. On a national scale, I'm reminded of our common need for fresh water when I read that the Colorado River, which delivers water for 1 in 12 Americans and nourishes 15% of this country's crops, could dry up in 13 years, according to the Scripps Institution of Oceanography, because in part of our demand for energy. And on a local scale, I am reminded of how all of us here today face the same risks from water contamination when I see the D.C. Rauscher trucks driving here through town on Meadow Street, hauling the liquid waste from the condensate tanks on the Trenton Black River well on our property to the Cayuga Heights Water Treatment Plant for eventual discharge into Cayuga Lake. I just saw that truck this evening, by the way, while I was driving here. Together, we face the prospect of removal of perhaps 4.5 billion gallons of water statewide and the need to dispose of approximately half of that in produced water in the first year of drilling alone. And I am reminded that we all face the effects of gas drilling together when I read that 36% of the acreage in Lansing is leased to gas companies, 39% in Ulysses, 49% in Enfield, 32% in Newfield, 26% in Danby, and 48% in Caroline. And my sense is that those numbers are low as you move away from Ithaca into the countryside south of here. Now, here's the schedule for tonight. First, Barbara Arundale will speak. She lives near the boundaries of Northeast PA and Sullivan County and is one of the founding members of Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. She will present on facts about gas drilling using slides. Joseph Levine from Damascus Citizens as well will present for approximately 10 minutes on the cumulative impacts of gas drilling. As part of his presentation, he will show as well about 10 minutes of a film by a filmmaker named Josh Fox, that part of the film dealing with the health effects of gas drilling. Then finally, Albert Appleton will speak for approximately 30 minutes. Mr. Appleton is an expert and international consultant on water resource management. His talk is entitled The Big Issues, Health Effects, Economics, the Future of the Upstate Landscape, and Your Choices as Residents and Citizens. Now, there will be a question and answer period after the three speakers finish their presentations, and we'll talk more about that at that point. Thank you. So without further ado, I think Barbara Arundale is ready to present.
Welcome, everyone. Everyone got this, essentially, this first slide, shale gas mining overview. Now, the reasons for this meeting and other ones that we've done is basically that we're looking at a situation that's very different from the conventional gas drilling. It involves low permeable geology and an overpressured layer but not flowing gas, which leads to the use of fracturing and also horizontal drilling. Now, all of this sounds very mysterious, and you want to understand why should we be worried. Well, first of all, there's the issue of the scale of development. If you look at the poster over there, that's a typical gas field. This is Yunis, New Mexico, and the wells are spaced approximately one every 40 acres. In this area, it could be similar. Now, in terms of each stage of development of the gas drilling, you have the drilling, the fracturing, gas processing, and waste handling. And each of these stages involve contamination. The gas drilling itself is, by definition, an intrinsically contaminating process. How can this be? Well, it waited really for deregulation, both federal and state. The industry's what's called best management practices in both New York and Pennsylvania are basically on what's called the honor system, which means that because there are so few actual inspectors, there's very little inspecting being done. Additionally, the exemptions for the oil and gas industry in the 2005 Energy Bill and prior to 2005 took away many of the statutory oversight that would have made it impossible to do the type of drilling that they're doing. And also, additionally, the EPA is basically still out to lunch. They were told by the Bush-Cheney administration to stand down, and they're possibly waking up, but they are not yet. And mostly the state regulators are functioning as facilitators in collusion with the industry, and their focus is to maximize production as the first and prime goal. And you want to understand that this, the water and the air, is what's involved. Who owns the water? Is this the commons? Is it owned privately? Who owns these rights? Whose right is it to sell them or destroy them? What rights do the future generations have? All of these are questions that need to be looked at. Now, if we look at, this is the Jonah gas field. This is before any drilling has been done. You see the two roads, it's like a V shape. This is between Yellowstone and the Grand Teton National Park in the north and the Red Desert in the south. This is part of the upper Green River Valley. It's the longest big game migration route in the lower 48 states and a crucial link that ties the greater Yellowstone ecosystem together. This area had been the home of 100,000 big game animals, and this herd is down 45%. Next slide. Okay, this is in 1999. The gas drilling has started. The wells are about 5-acre pads. There's open pits. You start to see the roads. Next slide. This is 2006, and the wells are filled in. Now, as you get along, most of these have done in about 7 years. So as you move along, you get implications to both water and air for the wildlife. Wildlife are attracted to the pits, and they drink from it. They get sick, and they either can't reproduce or they die. Next slide. This is further infill. Okay, and this is an oblique view of the Jonah gas field, and you see the each pit, and it goes on out to the distance. You also see the haze, which had never existed out west. So you have land impact, you have air impact, you have surface and groundwater impact. You have no oversight to the cumulative impacts and no continuous monitoring, no look at the aquifers or the underlying areas. Okay, next slide. Okay, these are lists of the real impacts of gas drilling. You have impacts to the water, the air, the surface water. You have soil contamination, you have community health and safety at risk, you have business diversity lost. The list is quite long, and it's real. These are the impacts that have been seen where gas drilling has already taken place and can be expected everywhere this type of gas drilling has taken place. This is what's starting to happen in Dimock, Pennsylvania, where there is a grid laid out by Cabot Gas and Oil, and you're starting to get the explosions and the water contamination. In Hickory, Pennsylvania, the air smells different. Josh Fox traveled out west, and he said, these gas fields, you can smell 40 miles away. Okay, next slide. This is part of the aspect of the drilling. These are called pits. They can cause groundwater contamination, soil contamination. There is material released, volatile material released, that are called aromatic chemicals. These are things like benzene and other aromatic materials. Aromatic just means that it has a certain type of chemical makeup. There's water pollution, threats to wildlife, farm, and domestic animals. Animals are attracted to the minerals because it has been through the centuries, through the millennia, that when they find a salt lick or whatever, they remember it, they go back and drink it because it's necessary for their life, although this material poisons them. These pits are usually lined with plastic, and they're not continuous material. They get holes in them. Almost every place that's been actually looked at where there's been a pit has qualified as a Superfund site, or would if they had the material that's in it still on the hazardous list. But we'll get to definitions later. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is a list of material that was from a deleted study that the EPA was going to publish in 2002. Some of the material in here is still on every list. There's been a list released. There was a list released in Pennsylvania in December, a short list of what's in the hydraulic fracturing fluid. There's a list, a new list that's just been released March 20th from Pennsylvania, which includes most of this material. There's a list of material from Colorado, which contains 240 chemicals that was released last February. There's a new list from out west that has 300. Now, the fracturing is done to wake up, essentially, to stimulate the layer. It's the layer where the gas is hard, and it's the gas does not flow freely. And it we will get to the actual function of it. On this slide, we have a few of the materials outlined that are in either the fracturing fluid or like the 2BE are used for the life of the well. There is a very good 28-minute audio of Dr. Theo Coburn describing the effects of 2-butoxyethanol, also called 2BE. These materials that are in the fracturing fluids are used under very little supervision. They are not analyzed, and they are not qualified as hazardous material, although if you use them for any other purpose, they are hazardous. So you get into this definition situation. the fracturing fluid is used and not returned to the surface. The industry originally said that 70% was returned to the surface. Now they say 40% is returned to the surface. Dr. Coburn, who is the world expert on the health effects of gas and oil drilling, says sometimes none of it is returned to the surface. And when you have this material pumped into the ground, it's going to move around, and it's going to stay there and affect the water and the environment forever. It's there. It wasn't there before, and now it is. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is about fracturing, hydraulic fracturing, or as it's called, fracking. The material is a mix of water, chemicals, and a fine sand or glass particles. The sand or glass particles is called a proppant. The object of the game is to cause the natural fractures in the producing layer to enlarge, and then these fine materials are pushed into there so that it keeps these new fractures open so the gas can flow out. The gas is not in pockets. It's what's called adsorbed, A-D-S-O-R-B, adsorbed onto the formerly organic material that's now the shale. And it's like stuck. And what happens when the material is fractured, it causes a rubbleizing. It's like a mini earthquake that makes the shale break up into little pieces, even though it's under tremendous pressure, and it stays in place. Now, when this happens, the proppants are moved into these fractures by the fluid, which is not just water, even though the statement made by industry and the regulatory agencies up until very recently has been it's only sand and water. This is patently untrue. Patently is an appropriate word because this is a patented process by Halliburton. And you cannot carry sand in any material that does not match its specific gravity. It would just instantly settle out, just like sand and water in waves at the beach. The sand does not stay suspended. So the materials that are used to suspend the sand in the fracturing fluid are not all benign by a long shot. It includes many materials, biocides, and chemicals that are good for the machinery. And since the industry has these exemptions put in place by the 2005 Energy Bill and others so that they don't have to worry about the toxicity or the effects or the liability, they use whatever's cheap and whatever works. There is no analysis done. There is no foresight of the environment. Okay, and you'll see on here there are natural fractures in the material. Like if you drive through a cut in the roadway on the highway, you see a very complicated display on each side of the road. Now, this kind of complicated display actually continues all the way down. The area of northeast Pennsylvania and up into New York is described as having natural fractures. And when the hydraulic fracturing is done, the large volume of water that's used, it doesn't just fill the well bore and then possibly the horizontal leg of the well, which is what is done. It goes down and then will go horizontally into the shale layer, which is thin. But it will fill the whole formation. That's how they can use these millions of gallons. It is not just the wellbore and the length of it. It fills the whole formation until it hits some impermeable layer, and then the pressure builds up. That's how they can use millions of gallons. And then at the point where the literally there's a mini earthquake and the material spreads further, they are actually often breaking that impermeable layer. And that's the connection to the natural fractures and the movement in the direction of where the pressure is less is the natural movement of material under pressure. And that's why, even though this event is supposedly happening very deep underground, it is still connected to the surface in this way because there are natural fractures. And also there is weak points just caused by the drilling itself. Okay. One of the situations that is caused by the drilling is also air pollution. There's air pollution caused by the exploration, by the drilling, by the processing, by venting and leaks. The drilling itself works, all the machinery works by venting. You can't have a pipeline unless you have a vent. It will blow itself up if the pressure goes too high. When the well is first drilled, they vent it and then they flare it, which allows all of the material to come to the surface. Now, my personal preference is to not call it natural gas because that sounds a little bit too innocuous. I call it N-gas. The N-gas includes methane, yes, that's the main thing they're after, but it also includes many other materials. It can include benzene, ethyl benzene, xylene, toluene, hydrogen sulfide, other polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, and sulfur dioxide, and carbon dioxide, and many other materials, propane, butane, light condensates. All of these materials have a volatile component to them. And when you build up the amount of air pollution that is released by the venting, by the exploration, from the pits, you have smog, ground-level smog. In Wyoming, in the winter, you have smog alerts that are as bad as in the summer in cities, and that's a very, very rural area. Smog is a killer. It causes lung tissue to age very rapidly, become brittle and ineffective. Okay, the drilling impacts range from noise over half a mile to surface water that can be a local problem or it can travel considerably further. You can have air pollution. You have, of course, your views are gone. But you also have wildlife impacts, and you have a global impact of the increase in greenhouse gases. Now, I know that the story about N-gas being better than fuel oil is well advertised. I've seen considerably other studies that add up the total greenhouse gas impact of gas drilling to include all of the venting at production and processing. And it adds up to possibly 5 to 6% better than fuel oil instead of the 45% it's touted as once you add in those additional effects. And this is this 5 to 6% difference really worth it when you consider the overall environmental effects that are profound and permanent? Okay, the title of this slide is Definitions Can Determine Your Fate and Future. And what this means is that one of the things involved is these definitions of what is hazardous and what is not. One of the things that was done in the by the federal government is to move many of these chemicals used in both the drilling, in the synthetic drilling muds, and in the fracturing fluids from lists of materials that are considered hazardous are considered toxic to considered hazardous. And by moving them, it meant that the regulatory stance was changed in relation to them. In addition, there in New York State, you have the idea of these different formations. Now, you have gas in the Herkimer, the Oneida, the Potsdam, the Onondaga, the Marcellus, the Vernon, and the Oriskany layers. Those are all different geological layers. Now, the New York DEC, to my mind, is a specialist in profound communication problems. One of the things, we found this map. This came from a DEC office. You notice the scale on there. The scale is 1 inch to 57,000 inches. Now, it took my husband, who delights in mathematical puzzles, to put this into something understandable, which is approximately 1 inch to 9/10 of a mile. And I don't think everybody delights in these kind of mathematical puzzles. And the different colors in this slide show you the different layers. Now, when they say that a well can only be one per 40 acres. Well, they're only talking about one layer. And then when you add these different layers, you can see how the wells can be considerably closer than that. Okay, this is an introduction to the idea that you're not dealing with a uniform area below ground. Just connecting the layers can do major damage. The pictures in this slide come from North Texas, where the Trinity Woodbine Aquifer that waters most of North Texas now has a plume of contamination from gas drilling, where there was an accident or an incident, as the DEC would like to call it, where a gas well was drilled, and at about 600 feet, something went awry in the casing. And instead of the fracturing actually happening below that level, it happened somehow to connect. And what's here is now a continuing plume of contamination from the gas-bearing layer, where you have the end gas and all that it contains polluting this man's water. It says at the bottom, the man pictured, his name is Sayers, a hydrologist told me not to use the water for anything, not even watering the grass. He had goats. His neighbor had goats, a herd of purebred goats. Some died, and then he had to sell the rest because he couldn't supply them with enough water, and they were getting sick because this material was all in the ground. Now, when you don't have clean water, you cannot keep animals, you cannot have a garden, and you have a lot of difficulties. Connecting the layers is a profound problem. When you have a material that's pumped into the ground at high pressure, it will move towards whatever is the least pressure. And if you have faults in the piping, in the casing, which I understand there's been testimony to the DEC that, here you can do the next slide, that 50% of all casings fail in 15 years. Gas wells are supposed to last, we've been told by Halliburton, can be refractured for 50 years. So at each fracturing along the way, you're going to be suffering additional problems. Now, this is my last slide, and this gives you some overview of some of the things that are happening around the country in terms of gas drilling. And the picture in the middle is one additional gas field. This is Denver City, Texas. And when Joe does his presentation, you will see much more. But what's happening in Dimmock, for instance, and other areas are all very similar. The New York State DEC has been shown by a Freedom of Information Act filed by the Earth Justice and the Environmental Working Group that they don't keep records of what they call of incidents. In order to find out what happened at a well, you would have to look up every single well record, and they don't tabulate any of that. So this is where we stand. Thank you.
That was Barbara Arendelle, Director and Chief Science Officer of the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability.
Our next presenter, as I indicated, is Joe Levine.
Damascus is a township in Wayne County, Pennsylvania, on the Delaware River. And Josh has property there and a house that he grew up on, and he's a filmmaker in New York. And when he heard about the landsmen coming into the territory who wanted to lease land and drill wells, We did some research and found out it was going on out west, and Josh went on a road trip where he took this footage here. This is going to be one segment of it because it's too long, and this is to display the adverse health effects of gas drilling, and I'm going to hope this works now.
Theo Colborne, recognized by Time Magazine and CNN as a hero of the environment, this year, the year of her 80th birthday, has done exhaustive research on the chemicals in the fracking fluid. She is a resident of the Grand Mesa area of Colorado, where there is an extensive drilling campaign going on right on the banks of the Colorado River.
We know through a cooperation through public health agencies and just data that the government should be collecting but isn't collecting. We've been able to get our hands on some of that, and we've begun to look at what's being used to drill a well, because people are screaming about the odors and the fact that they can't leave their homes because the fumes are so bad.
And we've got one right over here that's, it's disgusting. There's two strands of barbed wire around it. And, you know, there's families that live just right down the road.
And so everybody says, well, it's naturally occurring because, you know, it's water, it's from the ground. But what they kind of forget to mention is that everything down there has been in contact with the fracking fluid, and it's been in with the condensate, which is a petroleum product. And so it's not water. It's an industrial fluid at that point.
They're there, they're being mixed, they're in the opening, and then they're evaporating. Many of them are volatile. We broke them out by volatile and water soluble, so you can look at that as well. And think about the workers or the people whose yards or backyards or within 1,000 feet of their home have a well pad. They're inhaling these chemicals 24/7 around the clock.
But what you're seeing, those dark clouds released, are diesel. And they can go through 800 gallons a day of diesel to run this rig.
So you can see all of this smoke just blowing into their house. And that just goes on all night. The noise like this goes on
all the time.
They drill 24 hours a day.
Another one right down there, too.
When the people bought this property, this was a nature conservancy. It looks innocent. And when you do an infrared, they are billowing huge plumes, that whenever they exceed pressure and those valves lift to release pressure, it is just these huge plumes of volatile organic compounds that are very poisonous that are coming off.
The neurological effects are very insidious. I mean, at first, you may just have headaches. Then the next thing, you might have ringing in your ears, or you may be a little disoriented, or you may feel a little dizzy. But eventually, you may feel what is called peripheral neuropathy. And when you get to this stage, you have irreversible brain damage. And this is where your fingertips may be going numb. They may be tingling. You may be feeling tingling in a number of places on your body. You may begin to get swelling in your extremities, especially the arms and the legs, and never know where the pain is going to be. The pain can be excruciating.
3 years ago, I started getting really dizzy. It's about 3.5, maybe 4 now. I started getting really dizzy, and I thought I had an inner ear infection. I went to my doctor, and she's kind of, your ears are clean. So they sent me down for a CAT scan. It came back that I had MS. I went to an MS specialist, and he told me, yeah, I don't know what you have. You don't have MS, but I don't know what you have. So for the last 4 years, I have these lesions in my brain. Don't know where they came from. I have a neighbor that lives right back here about a mile. I guess it was 2 or 3 years ago, she was having migraines really bad, and they went in and did a CAT scan, and she also has lesions in her brain. We're talking, we want to get our scans together to see if there are similarities. A friend of ours, she's really bad off. She's had severe, severe breathing problems. She's on oxygen now.
In 2004, my whole body seized up. I couldn't move. I couldn't reach my face to eat. I was immobilized. I still have symptoms that would be consistent with rheumatoid arthritis, fibromyalgia, and then also dizzy spells, headaches. It's just an ongoing battle. You know, constant pain and muscle fatigue. And just general fatigue. Had my blood tested in 2004, October 2004, and I tested positive for benzene, toluene, xylene, ethylene, xylene, benzene, NP and NO, xylene, tribenzene, a bunch of chemicals. They're all the volatile organic compounds that are in the produced water, and they come up with the production of the methane gas.
And that was in your blood?
That was in my blood. Uh-huh. And when I said something to the company about it, they told me, because I figured it come from those pits. Because the mist was always blowing right over the house. And I was having trouble with my livestock, too. My goats, I was getting 2 out of 3 were stillborn. Uh-huh. My mares, I don't have any mares anymore. They wouldn't carry a colt full term for the past 8 years, 7, 8 years.
You got the volatile compounds, which, and those would be benzene, toluene, xylene, methane itself.
When I'd get out to try to help the goats with their problems, it would be in the middle of the night, and the air quality was horrible. I mean, that chemical smell. And that year we went on to lose, we lost over 50% of the crop of the kids. And everything seemed to trace back to a failure of the placenta to form properly. And that is very consistent with toluene exposure. We checked for the presence of traditional farm animal diseases, mineral deficiencies. We could find no diseases, no mineral deficiencies. These were very healthy goats that should have been reproducing very well. That guy lost all of his trees that were on the point of his property. There were some people that had cattle in here. They had 30 cows. They did not breed until they took them home and got them out of this little area. You look at known effects from toluene in humans, and it has reproductive effects. It has male infertility, testicular atrophy, tumors, failure of the placenta to form properly. Theo Colburn is going to be the person to ask. She's the one that because she's the endocrine disruption order.
Well, so many of the chemicals that they're using have never been tested for what they can do from fertilization to birth, you know, during the development of that animal. But at least 45% of the chemicals they're using so far in Colorado, we know are known endocrine disruptors.
And what does that do in a brief?
Well, if it's in the mother,
okay,
during gestation, whether it's a cow, a rabbit, you know, a horse, or a human, it can interfere with how that individual develops and basically maybe not kill that individual, but the animal's organ systems don't develop normally, so they don't function normally throughout life. And we know with humans, of course, it can impair learning ability, set you up for all kinds of disorders.
And they drilled 5 up here on the hill.
Right.
And
what's that smell?
I don't know. I can't smell anything.
You can't?
No, I haven't been able to smell anything for several years.
You lost your sense of smell, and so did he.
That is one of the side effects of hydrogen sulfide exposure. I was really sick when I got well. I had no
How
smell.
How is it that 2 of 5 people here have no sense of smell? Though? It didn't make sense.
It's really...
It's
really weird to live without smell. You know, I don't smell the cat box.
That's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, people say, ew, do you smell that? I don't smell anything. But also, like, for 2 years now, I haven't smelled flour. Like, I go to my roses and
what
I can't
what
smell
What about when you eat? You must smell.
Food has no taste at all. It's, like, all texture for me now. I can taste salty and I can taste sweet.
Right.
But I don't get any of the subtleties or aromas of food. Yeah, it's not good. And the worst thing to me is, like, people say, do you smell smoke or do you smell, mm-hmm, does it smell like methane in here? And I'm like, nothing. I got nothing.
You know, what's in common with all of us that live around this place? The pits, the chemicals being pumped into our atmosphere, the water being contaminated.
And these are the kinds of impacts that we have no government agency that's monitoring right now. I think what we need is full disclosure. Industry's not telling us what they're using. They're not telling us what chemicals, all of the chemicals they're using. I am concerned because when we do get a little information, it will tell us that, say, maybe 2% of chemical X and 4% of chemical Y are in this product. But then they don't tell you what is the rest of the fluid in that 42-gallon drum. We want full disclosure. Once the public hears the story, and they'll say, well, why aren't we out there monitoring? We can't monitor until we know what they're using. There's no way to monitor. You can't.
Why do you think they're keeping it a secret?
Well, liability, right? Come on. responsibility. No one wants to accept it. I think this is a major public health issue that needs to be addressed before we issue any more permits to drill any more wells.
You know, I would like to make just a couple of points, and I'll try and be brief. What I'd like to express is that, you know, water is our most valuable commodity. Poisoning the water is what's, a result of what happens during this industrial process. But what everybody should also know is that this project, this gas drilling project, represents industrialization of the landscape. So no matter what else it does or it doesn't do, these wells would be built. There's an industry model. This displays that industry model. They're laying pipeline. The network of pipeline across the country is extraordinary, and it's already laid out in this region and throughout New York. They're not laying out all of this pipeline to put in a few wells. There's going to be tens of thousands of wells. In New York State, there could be 40, 50, or 70, or 80,000 wells. So that's going to represent industrialization of the landscape. It's been called sacrificial industrial zoning. And the industry is exempt from any zoning and, of course, exempt from all environmental regulations. And the other point I would like to make is that this is also about cumulative impacts. These are different areas out west. This is the San Juan Basin. The other one was the Jonas Field. This is the San Juan Basin in Colorado and New Mexico, and this is the same thing. It's turned into a sacrificial industrial zone. This is previously remarkable landscapes of America that are being turned into industrial zones. This is now a frequency of one well per every 10 acres. So the desire of the industry to infill will maximize, it's about maximizing profit. That's what this is about. This is the Colorado River along Interstate 70 in Garfield County, Colorado. So you could see those well pads are right along the river in, you know, this once pristine river valley, some of the, you know, most incredible landscapes probably in the world. And that's what's happening to them here. There's no way to stop this program. There's been no way to stop this program out west. We think that, you know, we've got the only chance to stop this out east here. This is the San Juan Basin, and that's the frequency of wells that have been drilled there. This is a combination of oil and gas, but these are industrial sacrificial zones now. This is a list of the natural gas fields in the world. This list contains about 350 natural gas fields. And, I'm sorry, let me get back one more slide here. By size, the Marcellus, which we talk about here, is the third largest reserve in the world. Reports vary, but research shows that the Marcellus shale holds at most 500 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. 10% of that, or 50 trillion cubic feet, is what's considered recoverable. The United States uses this much gas up in 2 years. But the Marcellus, as you could see in this next slide, this is a bad I apologize for this slide. This is basically this region around here that comes into the tier of New York and across the ridge of New Jersey. This is what the target area is, and it is it is the next great hope for gas extraction. So they're targeting the Marcellus, and they plan to drill, like I said, 50 or 100,000 wells in New York. This is a map of the Delaware River Basin, and at the top, the green area is New York City's watershed. And the shaded part is the Marcellus. So that region is where the Marcellus overlaps the Upper Delaware River watershed and the New York City watershed. So at this point in time, New York City is fairly concerned about this issue. This is the installation of a pipeline. This we see being installed in the Upper Delaware watershed region. I'm going to show, and that's an indication of the pipelines that are in the southern tier of New York, and those are just the primary pipelines. The infill pipelines aren't even shown here. So the infrastructure is there, and it's going in, and it's not for a couple of wells. It's for industrialization of the region. You could see across the United States, those are just primary pipelines. And if you look at the density of some of those areas, keep in mind that the Marcellus has the greatest opportunity to look forward to for the industry. So this area over here, which actually doesn't really show a lot of pipeline area yet, which is our region here, is going to be inundated with eventually. The goal would be more wells than you saw in the western regions. This shows how the horizontal drilling works. They would drill down to a formation. This is actually shown in coal bed, but it's the same thing if it was Marcellus, and then they drill horizontally, and then they could frack again and go to another layer and drill horizontally down there. This is the latest list. Barbara showed an abbreviated list, but this is the latest list that came out of Dr. Colburn's group. And, you know, some of these topics at the top are, volatile chemicals, water-soluble, cancer-causing mutagens, that's generic mutation, developmental endocrine disruptors, brain and nervous system disorders. So, you know, all of these are that toxic. These are a serious list of chemicals. Here we're looking at 300. The latest list is something like 350-something chemicals that have been found to be employed in this drilling. This is a diagram that's merely showing sort of the scale of the depth of the drilling. This would be grade. This would be the depth of the Grand Canyon. So they're going 8,000 to 10,000 feet or more down to the target Marcellus. I think Barbara had that slide already. This is a typical well pad, 5-acre well pad. Most of these well pads stay under 5 acres because if it exceeds 5 acres, it requires a special permit. That's because the regulations were designed to accommodate the technology, actually the most economical technology. So it should be the reverse, where the regulations control the technology. That's not happening here. As part of Cheney's Energy Task Force and the 2005 Energy Act, that's how the laws are designed to accommodate this technology. That well was in northeastern Pennsylvania, and this is a typical sort of waste pit in I think this is the Allegheny National Forest here. And you know, what they're not used to out west is the flooding that we have out east here. We all know how much water is here, and how much rain there is, and how much flooding that goes on. And the water from these waste pits, which is highly toxic, if it doesn't just go through these plastic liner pits, it just will empty into the rivers during any floods. We're at the Pinedale Anticline area of Wyoming, this previously pristine environmental area. And this is one well pad, a typical 5-acre well pad with the holding ponds in it. And then this spreads out. Here you see the system expanding. The goal is to maximize extraction. This is some of the industrialization that happens on the landscape with these compressor facilities. This is New Mexico, Lee County, New Mexico, and just to display the industrialization that's required in the gas extraction operations. Here you can see the well system encroach upon the agricultural landscape. The circular shapes there are actually irrigation fields, and the well goes down in the middle. And this is the Great Plains Aquifer, the High Plains Aquifer, which supplies groundwater for 20% of the U.S. United States cropland. This is a non-rechargeable aquifer. So the water that's been in this aquifer has been used over the centuries, and it's been there supplying water. So now they're in doing these wells and threatening this aquifer, which supports the entire agricultural landscape out there. This won't be, I don't know how much of that particular area is still producing any agriculture, but it won't be much longer that it can. This is an image of the Allegheny National Forest in the Susquehanna River Basin here, and it's now, for the last couple of years, they've been drilling in the Allegheny. And this is an image of the same area, in the Allegheny. And you could see the roads, which also is like looking at an X-ray of where the pipelines go. And you could see the well pads. And you've got every environmental issue here that you can imagine: segmentation, destruction of the landscape and habitat. And this is going on without any oversight or jurisdiction. The industry controls these national forests. This is in the Allegheny National Forest, this processing plant. This is the expansion of the well system. These are Google Earth images. So this is expansion of the well system in the Allegheny National Forest. It's a national forest. Absolutely. I think most of the drilling in the country is on U.S. National Forest land and Bureau of Land Management land. In the East, most people own their mineral rights. That's not entirely the case, but out West, they don't own the mineral rights. So the earlier landscapes are national lands, and they or even private lands. They could just drill because they own the industry owns the mineral rights. This is a national forest, so they're allowed to drill. Otherwise, people lease their mineral rights if they do own them to the drilling companies. The Allegheny National Forest, and there's sort of these pristine, salmon rivers. Salmon River is a primary river in the Allegheny, and the wells are just, they overlook the Salmon River right now. The Delaware River Basin, I showed you that before. This is, a view of the Delaware River Basin and the Delaware River, and they're coming into the Delaware River Basin. You saw that slide from Barbara. This, unfortunately, is I'm sorry about this. This is a superimposition of the wells in Ithaca onto the landscape here, and something we I think want to make sure we avoid here. Thank you.
Joe Levine, co-founder of the Damascus Citizens for Sustainability. You're listening to a forum on natural gas drilling, health effects, economics, and the watershed. This is Unwelcome Guests, and you're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, 88.1 Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, KRFP Moscow, Free Radio Olympia, KQRP Salida, WGDR Plainfield, KWMD Kasilof Anchorage, WZKW Kingsville, KOWA Olympia, WRFN Nashville, WUOW Oneonta, KRBS Oroville, WKNH Keene, Radio Veronica US, WYQZ Warrenton Bealeton, KSOW Cottage Grove, or WMRW Warren.
Our next speaker is Al Appleton, an international consultant on water resource management, the environmental management of watershed and rural landscapes, and the economics of sustainable development. Former New York City Commissioner of Environmental Protection.